The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Thursday, I'm sitting here pointing at you. You're looking at all of your work you have in front of me, and I'm thinking, why isn't he looking at me? Oh, yeah, it's my turn. Gary, how are
you? I'm very fair about this, and if it's your time, it's your time.
That's right. Wait a minute.
I'm not going to take...
Like I'm dying or something.
I'm not going to take your time away from you.
Eric Harley.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But enough about me. What do you think about me? Well here we are. Another crazy week.
Yeah.
Thursday. Wednesday, another crazy day. I don't know that there's going to be a normal day ever again.
I don't believe so. You and I have talked about the fact that, hypothetically, if Trump doesn't win in 2020, it's time for us to quit.
Yeah, no, we would have to retire.
We would have to retire just because it'll be boring.
Well, because, I mean, I know for the left that already, because they're preparing, and pretty much Mike Pence, the vice president, is Satan, according to the left. So, and it's interesting because he's Satan because he's so religious.
Yes, that's true. Which is odd.
We don't know how they got there, but and so he's the next Hitler. Wait for it. It's like Bill Maher said. Well, no, all the other guys before, they weren't Hitler, but Trump really is Hitler. Until Mike Pence is Hitler, or the next Republican. So, but with all due respect to the vice president, we would have to retire if he becomes president, or I don't know.
After 2020, it wouldn't be Pence. Let me clarify.
The theory would be that either Trump didn't win or Trump steps down, which, by the way, that conspiracy theory is still out there.
Okay.
Trump's not going to run again. And Vice President Pence would run. And who was it they were saying? Ted Cruz. I can't remember if the new version is Ted Cruz or still, was it Paul Ryan?
He's running again.
Yeah. Huh?
He's running again.
Who? Oh, Trump? I have no doubt.
Yeah, he said he is, but
I don't subscribe to the conspiracy theory. I don't subscribe to the conspiracy theory at all, but it is out there. It's still a lot. I have no idea why it's out there, but it is.
I did come to a conclusion yesterday, and it's the only conclusion that you can come to if you're a critical thinking person.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
The president commuted Alice Johnson's life sentence. Mm. She is a black woman who was convicted and sentenced to life for a nonviolent drug, which was cocaine conviction.
Right.
And he commuted her life sentence. So she will get out of prison, which means you can only come to one conclusion. He's a racist.
Oh, yeah. No, that clearly makes him a racist.
I wanted to make sure that we cleared the decks on that one before we started the show.
Right, yeah. Yes. And it's because they say so.
Yes, so I...
had she not been African-American, he's racist. It's also sexist.
Yes. Sexist, right.
Right.
Who was it? Somebody on Twitter put yesterday that how would the left respond if Trump came out, in the next month and commuted the sentences of 100 nonviolent drug offenders? What would be the response of the leftist media?
He's putting, people who have drug problems or something back on the street.
Okay. That would,
I don't know. Because they're the ones, you know, it's often the left and some libertarians that are saying, you know, that if it's a nonviolent crime and that they're serving for, that they should not have to do so much time. The sentences are too heavy, especially the claim is that many of the sentences are not handed down fairly.
Well, this is a woman who she's a grandmother, great grandmother,
right?
She's done 20 years in prison already for the first time offense. Now it was it was concerning cocaine trafficking,
right?
Again, when I saw that, I just laughed and I said, "Really quiet on Twitter." And I was actually waiting for that first one saying, "Trump's letting dangerous people out on the street." Because when you look at, especially the non-violent drug offenses, I'm not saying that there aren't you're talking about libertarians that have talked about the fact that, you know, some of these sentences were just, you know, ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, a life sentence for a first-time offender, that you don't even get that for murder. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, we can have that debate and argument at another time. As to, you know, what's fair and what is, there's the fair word again, fair and what isn't fair. But when you think about it, the real promotion of it, because they're a bigger party, comes from Democrats who have talked about the fact that the drugs are full of nonviolent drug offenders. We need to get them out of prison because our prisons are overcrowded right now. And not to say that you don't have some Republicans and some libertarians talk about that, but really that's been owned by Democrats for a while. So that was interesting when I saw that yesterday. What if Trump came out and just said, okay, 100 or 500 or 1,000,
mm-hmm.
you know, 1,000 nonviolent drug offenders, I'm commuting all of their sentences. How would the left spin it? And they left it at that. Just left at that. And I just said,
well, it's like we said, if the Republicans just imagine that they voted for it on Capitol Hill, that they voted for it and they got enough votes to pass a single payer bill, you know, and then it went to, and I mean a Bernie Sanders single payer bill, you know, if it was exactly as Bernie Sanders, I don't think Bernie Sanders would have a problem voting for it. But the question is, would other Democrats have a problem? But other liberals have a problem.
Bernie Sanders would be so happy. He'd say, I don't care about his damn Russian collusion.
Nobody cares about your collusion. I don't know why. It sounds more like Jackie Mason.
It does.
What are you going to do? But that's the question we asked, I think, during the election season a few times. Because the president, before he became president, had talked about it. You know, we got to take another look at single payer. He was entertaining that idea. And we said, okay, just imagine if he were to pass or if he were to get single payer to his desk and sign it. Along the way, how many Democrats would fight against it? How many Democrats would criticize it after it passed that he didn't do it right or whatever?
Well, you know, I don't know anymore because remember, a ton of Democrats jumped aboard the budget.
Yeah, well, that's true.
If you're going to spend money, you know, a bunch of Democrats, so they feel that they can jump aboard. If they believe that the Republicans or the president on fiscal issues are going to spend a ton more money, they'll jump on and support it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't believe there's any blowback for that. And there was no blowback a few months ago when the budget was passed.
Yeah, and you know that's a good point. My question is, do the Democrats now see the polls? The president's rating going up a few points, but beyond that, do they realize that certain things they can, I guess, go along with the president on and not get hit politically on it? Because I think early on in his presidency, had that been the case, it would have been really tough, right? Because the whole Russian collusion thing was new. He's not my president. It's not a legitimate presidency and all of that. But it was like, remember the first, what was it, year or so with Obama in office, the late night comedians. Oh, there's nothing funny about this president. The reason we don't tell jokes about President Obama is because there's nothing funny.
He's much too serious.
That's right.
And that was hogwash. That was a load of crap. Yes.
But I'm wondering if that has worn off, or that they're seeing the polls and thinking to themselves, you know, there are things we can go along, because, you know, when we talk about spending, it's only really a few conservatives on Capitol Hill, relatively speaking, that are against the massive spending. But even a couple of those went along for the ride, you know. So I wonder if they believe politically now it's not going to be such a big hit if they go along with it, with him on certain things. Certainly not on border control, certainly not on, you know, on issues like that, or funding, you know, for a wall. Although, who knows? Maybe after, what happens after the midterm if the Democrats, if there isn't this blue wave and they don't get control of the Senate? Is what I wonder politically. What happens? Do they, because you start from the day after the midterm, you start 2020.
Well,
you have to fight against the president to get him out of office.
I guess you would have to look. We would have to look. Really, 8-9 months from now, after there's a new Speaker of the House, and see what direction the Speaker in the White House wish to go in. If the, you know, if Republicans are the victors here, you know, what they wish to accomplish in that next year and a half. In order to move up, you know, 2020, and the president at that point being in office for 2 years, you would expect that there would be maybe not enough discipline in the tweets, but in their focus as to what we need to get accomplished. Because I'm sure there's going to be I have no doubt that the president wants to run again. If the president wants to run again, he believes that, you know, when they get a new Speaker of the House, that after 2 years, this has become his party, and he can move things along in the direction that he wishes to move them along. The president has not fulfilled all of his promises, but I bring that up because Ann Coulter yesterday, somebody, you know, because there's been a ton of memes over the last couple of days. The president's done this. The president's done this. The president's done this. Ann Coulter. There's no wall. I could just see that vein bulging in her neck.
She's like one of the last, and I don't mean, you know, among the Trump supporters, but in the media, really, she's, maybe she was the only one still carrying the torch on the wall. I mean, she's been on it from, you know, for months,
yeah,
if not from the beginning.
You think, right? About it. If the president, you know, and he brought it up a couple of weeks ago at a rally, but if the president didn't bring up the wall and just kept all the other things that he wishes to do, would anybody be talking about it? Let's say, for example, you know, would they go in and they get a deal with North Korea? And if you saw the markets yesterday, was looking at some analysis of the markets believe that the whole tariff things is going to be solved.
Right.
The markets believe that at, you know, at either at G7 or whatever, this is going to be taken care of. Even though the Hill had an article that the president now wants to increase the punishment on Canada. By the way, we found out this, because this is the bizarre thing about the whole steel tariffs. That I just saw yesterday. We saw one story that we brought up on yesterday's show that said, well, no, we actually have a trade surplus with Mexico on steel. Canada said yesterday, we have no idea why they're doing the steel tariffs. We have a trade deficit. America ships us more steel than we ship them.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you want to put you're going against your own best self-interest?
Well, and then the EU stating yesterday that their tariffs basically,
yes,
are going to take effect early July, so just a few weeks away.
But the feeling yesterday from the markets was the fact that the stock market went up is that they're going to resolve all of this. This will all be resolved. I don't know where they're getting that from,
right?
Unless they've just looked at the reversals before of the administration and say they're not really serious on it. And here's my thinking: they believe that if the stock market starts getting hit, or the president, for example, sees second quarter great GDP growth that is expected. The Atlanta Fed said 4.8, And then they see indicators that the third quarter and fourth quarter, because it takes a while for tariffs to hit and have,
right.
a, you know, have,
right.
a, have a reaction in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But if he sees the economy going down, there's no way long term that he'll do it, because he knows he can't be that it's going to be much tougher to be reelected if the GDP is down.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially with those retaliatory tariffs by other nations. If when that starts piling up and industry here at home starts hurting, you know, you have your governors like Greg Abbott and others, the governor of Iowa, that are going to be, you know, calling the president, and essentially they're going to have to, you know, tell them to reverse it, or they're going to have to basically work with it.
And they're still talking about the legislation. There's an article on it yesterday. The legislation is slowly moving forward.
Right.
To tie where Congress has to, well, who knows exactly what the bill would be, approve or have oversight over the president calling, you know, national security. And they would,
right.
they would attach it to a defense appropriation bill that has to pass.
Right. Which you and I were talking off the air. It would have to be attached to something like that.
Right.
You know, probably to have legs. And there's a good chance that it will. And so maybe the market sees that. You and I have been wondering, where is the, you know, where is the calling from the governors and others, you know, for the president?
It's been awfully quiet.
It's been very quiet, relatively speaking. Do they believe it's going to be solved at G7?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. So the midterms have begun.
Mm-hmm.
The midterm campaigning has begun. I want to play this audio cut. This comes from Republican California governor candidate John Cox from last night, because he will be running off against Gavin Newsom. And you wonder what the message will be from some California Republicans. Here's one.
Mr. Newsom and his corrupt cronies did a bunch of ads touting their opposition to the president. Well, let's send him the very first message, and that is, it wasn't Donald Trump who made California the highest tax state in the country. It was Gavin Newsom and the Democrats.
Just thought that was really interesting. Let's take Trump out of it.
Hmm.
Every time they bring up Donald Trump, we'll simply say Trump had nothing to do with the problems of California. This is the Democrats of California. Take it away. You know, still support Trump.
Right.
But the fact is, take him out of the debate completely as to the problems of California. And it's interesting that that was one of the first messages. This isn't about Trump. It's about the Democrats in California. I would bring up many of the things that we have talked about, the story that 40% over, was it 46% of the people of San Francisco wish to move out.
Right.
Bring that up.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
Mainly dry across the U.S. today. We will see some scattered showers in Florida, portions of the Central Plains and Upper Great Lakes. But for the most part, the heavy rains that we've seen over the past several weeks will have subsided. It's been a lot of progress made on corn planting in the past couple weeks. In fact, of the 18 states reporting, 97% of the corn crop is in the ground. 86% has emerged. Soybeans ahead of schedule, 87% planted, and that exceeds the 75% that is typically planted by this time of year. A few select cities forecast in high temperatures. Seattle, clear today. Rain returns tomorrow, high 73. Dallas, the heat wave continues. I define a heat wave as any three-day period of 90-degree-plus temperatures or above. Dallas at 96 today, and it's safe to say the heat wave there continues. In Chicago, we'll see a 30% chance of showers, high today 82. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
They have no fear. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up on the show today, another lie that President Obama told the American people on how he would deal with Iran. Just unbelievable. This is why people always used to ask, what side is he on? We'll get to that coming up here. The report that James Comey about to get spanked by the inspector general. We'll have that, not literally. McDonald's to have all kiosks in all stores by 2020. A great point that was made on the NFL and the anthem yesterday. We'll get to that. New poll on what Americans think about the Miss America gathering, whatever it is, the decision that the former Miss America pageant decision.
The UU.
Yes. We will have that coming up here. Oh, no, vegetarian chicken at KFC? You got to be kidding me.
Well, it's can't be. Oh.
Only in the UK, though.
Yeah, okay.
We'll have that one.
So it's fake chicken.
Yes, fake chicken. The left turning away from Bill Clinton, if you notice that over the last 48 hours or so. Google's parent company apparently has said no to tying pay to diversity. No, we have to tie pay to performance. It's a no-no. Well, we've talked about how far the left is actually going to go, we've talked about how far the left wants to go, and we've talked about what is the reality of how far they actually can go.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those stories out there. And in his own words, David Cassidy admitted before he died that he did not have dementia, just a liver disease. We'll get to that here in a little bit. And the leader of the Lollipop Guild, died. The last munchkin. Can you use that word? Is that politically incorrect these days?
That was the character, right?
It was a character of the munchkin.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they referred to in terms of the group.
I just want to make sure I'm politically correct. I'm obsessed by that, as you know.
Because at one point it was little people, right? I mean,
yes.
Right. So I don't know if that is also outdated. I'm not sure.
You know, we played that audio cut from John Cox, who was the Republican California governor candidate.
Right.
We're run against Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
And I just found it interesting. It's always tough. You and I have always said this. You know, it's easier for us to look at national elections. It's tougher for us to look at elections in a state, because when you live in a state many times, you have a much better sense of where the mood of the people is. And even though you can see, you know, all the different newscasts and newspaper coverage, and you could go to all of the conservative writers of a particular state and see how they talk about it. You know, the story from came out, was it the Mercury News that had the story about San Francisco? And that was it. 46% of people believe that they will be out or have to get out or want to get out within the next 5 to 6 years. They just can't afford it. And, you know, you see stories like that and you ask yourself, I think it's more of a question, you know, what is the mood of the middle class in California? So when you have John Cox come out and say that, you know, that Gavin Newsom had their ads touting their opposition to President Trump, and it seems like one of the clear messages coming from the Republican Party, and I would hope this would be not just, you know, a one and done, that this is what the John Cox campaign and other campaigns in California would be promoting. And it's not Donald Trump who made California the highest taxed state in the country. It was Gavin Newsom and the Democrats. You pound that over and over and over again. And I wonder how big the audience is who is willing to be receptive to that message in California. Think about it. If you really do have close to half of people in the San Francisco area believing they've got to get out because they can't afford to do it, that's a lot of tension on someone. You know, each and every year, for example, you know, we get, you know, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, we get our property taxes, and when you see your valuation go up, it's like, oh boy, okay. Here we go, you know, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
People are, you know, very, very sensitive when it comes to money things. And if you look at California and how expensive it has gotten, when you see, for example, you know, Bernie Sanders railing now against Disneyland, when does it come to the point where the people of the middle class in California says, you know, it's not the companies, it's our government, it's our regulations.
Yes, yeah, right.
And again, I haven't been privy to see the commercials that Republicans run. I saw this from John Cox, and you wonder whether the Republicans have said in California, look, they're going to hit Trump. So what we have to say is Trump doesn't apply here. Anything that Donald Trump is doing doesn't apply to what's going on in the state of California.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things here, knowing that, generally speaking, especially in the case that that John Cox is in, the running for governor, it's a blue state. You know that essentially the state went to Hillary, and you know all the Trump haters are out there. But if you don't promise something, if you don't give them something, Gavin Newsom is going to be about what? You know, the far left and everything else that California has been about politically for a long time. You go on the issues. And it really isn't the president that's causing all of their problems. It is their state and their government. That's how they got there. The cost of living is what it is because of the cost of government.
Sanctuary cities existed before Donald Trump became president of the United States.
Yep.
And, you know, you think about it, the high taxes, the fear of the middle class that we can't afford to live here anymore. The wanting to split California into 3-6 states, 57 states, whatever. I mean, the mm-hmm. all that push comes from a tremendous amount of anger and fear from a significant portion of people as to where the state of California is going.
Right.
And so if you're a Republican in California running for state office, how receptive are the number one, how many independents are there, and how receptive is the middle class to your message in California, or does the hatred for Trump trump all?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the answer to, I don't have the answer to that question. I don't know. I just, again, just noticed when I saw the audio cut of Mr. Cox, and I went, well, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was, I just went as, you know, you and I talk about amateur political consultants.
Mm-hmm.
I went, that's really good. Take Trump out of it.
Right.
You can say, look, I support Trump and he supports me. But state of California, the state of the state of California, it's got nothing to do with Donald Trump. Nothing to do with it. They want you to look over here because they don't want you to look at what they have done to the state. The taxes that you have to pay, and then get specific on what, you know, the middle class, whatever the tax burden is, you focus on that. And what are the things that they're talking about in California? What do they want to protect? They want to protect illegal immigrant criminals over you, the law-abiding citizen of California. Well, on the financial issues that people are scared about, I would attack that, and I would attack sanctuary cities big time in the state of California, and hit specifically the fact, because I think it's the biggest moral dilemma is not about whether you care for people from other countries who have found themselves in a bad situation. It's about, in sanctuary cities, protecting illegal immigrant criminals. And their freedom is more important to the left than the safety of citizens. And I would say that over and over and over and over again. Why? Because I believe it's effective. And when you see, like I said, when we saw the poll from San Francisco, and you wonder what really the poll is. How many people fear for their financial security in California as compared to other states?
Well, I mean, it's the state that has the highest poverty level for a reason. The cost of living. And I talked to a friend, it was a few months ago. It was the day that the president went to visit California and see the prototypes for the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I said, what is it like? And he said, it's maddening because of the cost of living. He said, the other things, some of the other social issues and everything else, he said, that I don't really have a problem with. People are going to be how they're going to be. And California's been, many on the far left that populate that state. It's been that way for a number of years. So some of those things he can put aside. That's not the driver in his everyday business. That's not the driver in his everyday home life. It's the struggle and knowing. I mean, here's a guy who's in a few years going to be looking at retirement and saying to himself, and he told me, he goes, I don't think I can stay here in retirement. I just can't. It's just too, and which means he's got to get up. He's lived there for decades. He's going to have to pick up and move. That's not easy. And where are you going to go? I mean, if you think about California, any state, any given state, we've talked about the struggles of the parts of Michigan and the economy of a state. But you have to ask yourself, how is it that we are here and other states are booming? How is it that you can get the same house I have, which is a $700,000-$800,000 home, for a fraction of that in other states? How is it that the cost of gasoline is so much lower in other states? How is it that my take-home pay is so much less? How is it that every single thing I buy is so much more expensive than it is in other states? Why is that the case? Well, the only answer is the cost of government.
We had played the audio cut from Morning Joe where Chris Matthews was on there. And Chris Matthews was talking about the elite Democrats, that they don't relate. They don't care about the middle class. They're obvious in their elitism and they don't care. Is there any greater degree of that happening than in the state of California?
I don't know that there is.
Where there seems to be a disconnect between politicians and the middle class. So will Republicans ever stand a chance there? I guess would be my question, if you message it correctly over and over again, or does Donald Trump hatred trump everything? And I don't have the answer to that question, but right. When I heard Cox's comments, I went, or in his speech last night, I said, okay, those seem to be, to me, they're on message.
Well,
let's focus in on our state and what we're doing wrong.
Sure, sure. But then effectively, how do you become, if he were to win, or any Republican were to win and become governor, how do you reverse and do away with a California Air Resources Board or any of those other agencies, environmentalism and everything else? That's part of that cost of government along the way in a state like California. I don't know how you get it done.
Well, you get elected first.
You have to get elected first, but then the real job, that's where, and the legislature is going to battle against everything you do. I tell you, I wouldn't envy any Republican in that office.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We'll play that, soon, the Morning Joe audio from a couple of days ago when Chris Matthews was on, and they were talking about the problem with the Democrats.
Right.
And
the elitists.
The elite, and this, again, coming from some of the most liberal people out there saying they don't relate to the middle class. You see what's going on in California right now. You see that financial fear that people have.
Right.
That really I look at and I say, I'd love to see the comparisons of other states. You know, there may be other hydro. Illinois might challenge them.
Sure.
Right. But when you look at it, I mean, obviously the left has identified what their problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, can the Republicans identify it also and use it, maybe not to win, get closer in some of these extremely liberal states? Is there a receptive audience? I guess my question is there a receptive audience in a California or an Illinois for the right person to win? Are they ripe to start changing or evolving slowly?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
How's everybody doing?
You know, I saw the headline on the Border Patrol and taking into custody, over 50,000 illegal immigrants for the third month in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And they said this last month was triple over the same month in 2017. And the point that is being made in the media is that Trump's policy on the border and enforcement policy has not had the desired deterrent effect. Well, what else has changed?
The economy's doing better.
Well, the economy's doing better. And sanctuary city policy, sanctuary state in California, the left proudly promoting that in major cities across America, talking about the fact that, hey, which is promoting to illegals, if you come here and you end up in jail, our local people, you know, aren't going to call ICE. We're not going to work with ICE. So we've got sanctuary city or sanctuary county, sanctuary state policy here.
You're going to be safe here.
You're going to be safe.
Right.
You know, that's the media's not talking about that. Now, there has been pushback in California. We do know and we support that. You know, look, if your local authorities wish to cooperate with ICE, it just sounds so ridiculous when you say it, when we have this discussion. I don't even know why we're having it. It's just insane policy, sanctuary city policy and state and county. But the overall message, it's not even the details of the policies or laws themselves that are in place. It's that message. If you come here, you're going to be safe. We're not going to cooperate with ICE.
If you're a criminal, we will protect you.
So not only can you come here for those who are just coming for jobs, you can come here for a number of reasons. And in fact, if you want to come here as a criminal, hey, we're going to look the other way. So I don't know what is behind the surge, but you can't ignore that fact and tell the whole story. There's no way. The media is trying to do that. But that other very important part of it is the fact that those sanctuary city, county, and state policies are certainly a draw. They're very inviting to anybody who wants to come here from another country.
We spent a little time in the first hour talking about the situation in California. But remember the polling that we also talked about that came out a couple of weeks ago. Lead on the items for voters, immigration. Immigration, illegal immigration. Number one topic right now. It wasn't a few years back. I mean, it's something that was talked about, but normally you saw that it was the economy. But we have seen that immigration has gone with likely voters right up to the top. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about John Cox running for the governor's race against Gavin Newsom, it's still an uphill battle. But when you hear the fact of when he immediately addressed and said, they're running ads against Donald Trump. Our message to them is very, very simple. Donald Trump did not cause the high tax state that we live in today. Donald Trump, yeah, he didn't say this, but I would add to this. Donald Trump did not create the sanctuary cities where the Democrats and Gavin Newsom wish to protect illegal immigrant criminals, that their willingness to protect illegal immigrant criminals supersedes their responsibility to ensure that citizens of California are safe. That is reprehensible. We are against that as a Republican Party. We invite you to join us if you believe these simple things. If it's getting too expensive to live in the state of California, if you believe that it's immoral to protect illegal immigrant criminals in this state, then join us and be quite aggressive about it and run the ads. You and I have always been a little bit befuddled, as it seems like the Republicans at times seems lost when they have the issues with the vast majority of the population is with them, even in liberal states, and they refuse to pound those messages into the dirt. You just don't stop with that messaging over and over and over again. That's why, when I saw Cox say that, I said, okay, right out of the gate, boom. Now, the question is, we've seen this happen so many times. Republicans will come up and mention the important things and then seem to forget about it and drift off into discussing issues that, and we have said before, getting baited by the Democrat challengers on what the Democrats, wish to view as important as, you're a racist. That's ridiculous. We're not even getting in that discussion. Let's talk about sanctuary cities. Let's talk about taxes. Get back to the messaging of what even the middle class of California is so concerned about.
Yeah. And I think you can connect to people because, we played that discussion on MSNBC Morning Joe the other day. And the point was made. They say it's about the economy. Well, for everyday life, it is. It is about your economy. It is about what you're having to deal with on a daily basis. I mean, that's the one thing I think that everyone in California. Remember when 2008, oil was $147 a barrel. Now, conservatives had been screaming, drill, baby, drill. And when it hit $147 a barrel, Democrats, a number of them, it was the majority of Democrats.
It was the first time that a majority of people who identified as liberals,
right, said we need to drill.
We need to drill. The drilling and lowering the price, doing whatever you need to do to lower the price of oil was more important than the environment.
Right. And that's something you can use to connect with people. You're not going to get the hardcore liberals to vote for you if you're a John Cox, but if you're a Republican in that state, and I think because we've seen the pushback from, and it's not unexpected from an Orange County or parts of California, Kern County, San Diego area. You're going to have your Republicans and your conservatives in that state, no doubt. But the pushback on that sanctuary state policy, that was a real growing movement. You had local leaders that were fighting to be able to basically keep their people safe.
And you just mentioned, wow. I'm going to play the cut from Morning Joe. This is from Tuesday morning. This is what we referenced to the last portion of last hour. We played it on yesterday's show, did we?
Yeah. Was it yesterday?
Yeah. I think we played it yesterday. Because this is the, you know, you have Morning Joe, the morning show on the most liberal network in the United States, talking about what the problem is with Democrats, which is sort of what John Cox in his speech after, you know, he will be in the runoff with Gavin Newsom, as they call it, the runoff. It's a general election in November, was talking about, look, this isn't about Trump. It's about the situation of the state was created by Gavin Newsom and the Democrats. But here they talk about, because they got into talking about RFK and the assassination of RFK, and 50 years later, what's the difference in the Democrat Party? And it's really interesting to hear this conversation, and nobody really disagree with it at all.
Tom, we were talking in our last hour with Seth Moulton, Democrat from Massachusetts, about who the Democrats should be right now in the age of Trump. And I'm struck listening to you all talk about Bobby Kennedy, that he was a very different kind of Democrat than many that we see today. Is there a lesson for Democrats to learn about politics, about public presentation, about how to defeat Donald Trump, that they can take from Bobby Kennedy?
Well, you know, I read the interview the other day. I quoted it last night. This kid, he was a 16-year-old busboy who held Bobby Kennedy's head up when he was shot.
Juan. Yeah.
Romero.
Yeah.
And Juan Romero. And he said when Kennedy walked into his room, when he was delivering room service, that Kennedy didn't look through him, but he looked at him. And he said, you know, I felt I was 10 feet tall. And you and I knew Tip and Tip O'Neill and people like that. They're real liberals and they're phonies. They're pie in the sky. Until they're always looking in the middle of the distance. They think they're better than everybody. They went to Yale Law, whatever. And whatever they got, they claim they're better than anybody. A true Democrat, lowercase d, thinks they're no better than anybody else. That's what a Democrat is. And when the party regains that with white, black, Hispanic people, everybody, starts to think of themselves as one of them instead of being better than them, they'll get back to the party of the people. And they're not there yet. There's too many elitism. There's so much elitism in the Democratic Party. It's so outrageous. And it all comes to the notion of the meritocracy being entirely academic-based. You don't want to hear about a master plumber being an elite. He is, or she is, but it's all academic, and it's a game they've been playing with themselves, and it's self-saluting. And I'm telling you, the people feel it, there's a party going on, and they ain't invited to it. And that's a big part of this. It's not just economics. I don't buy the whole Marxist argument, it's all about economics. It's not all about economics. It's about sensing that your leaders give a damn about you personally. And when that going on, I see some people like that out in the Democratic Party today. And but they got to keep a low profile. You got to stay down. There's too much self-saluting, too many events that seem to be about saluting them, too many galas. People are tired of it. I'm saying.
Yes, and I forgot. I wanted to get to the galas part of it. Too many galas.
That's right.
You know, we've talked about where the elitism comes in, and it's more than what Chris Matthews is saying. It's the elitism that we believe that we know what's best for you. That's what he's failed to mention. It is, you know, in Obamacare, when the president lied to his own constituents, he lied to Democrats. He didn't lie to Republicans. He lied to the people that voted for him, that trusted him, that were the ones that championed hope and change. He lied to them about their health care to the point of telling them they could keep their own doctor. When he said it, we all knew it was a lie. Mm-hmm. And those same people, here's the point. The reason the Democrats have the elitism is because the rank and file and the middle class and their loyal constituents accept it. If you didn't accept it, they wouldn't be in power in California. They wouldn't be in power in New York. They wouldn't be in power in Illinois. But the fact is, they know it. Nancy Pelosi and her elitism, she knows that the rank and file constituents will accept the elitism. You and I talked about the soda pop situation when Bloomberg brought it up in New York. And they did a poll and 42% of New Yorkers thought it was a good law. And we said, what are they thinking? And then we asked that question. We started getting calls from people in New York City who agreed with the law, who said we can't do it on our own. Cigarettes need to be more expensive. Soda pop needs to be more expensive. Fast food needs to be so expensive because we can't stop ourselves. Bloomberg doing the interview a couple of weeks ago that everybody, they got a ton of airplay, where he said, no, people say you shouldn't tax the poor. And he was advocating taxing the poor because their money is better in the hands of the elites like him, so they can direct their life, these poor peasants, they can direct their life into success.
The same guy that wanted to control the size of soda you bought.
Yep. And so it's more than just imagery. It's the substance of the fact that there are Democrats in the middle class that wish to be controlled.
Yes. It's not what they're selling. It's who's buying it.
But there you go. That may be our audio cut of the week.
Because
it may be our audio.
It's what's interesting too is it's occasional. I think the last time we heard something like this was from Chris Matthews was 2011. The rumor had been going around that Obama was not going to run for re-election. I guess that's a thing now. You know, we talked about earlier with Trump, but Chris Matthews came out and he was talking about Obama at the time, saying the guy doesn't like to meet with anybody, not even members of his own party. He doesn't like the gig. He doesn't like the job. I would love to sit down with Chris Matthews and say,
don't be crazy now. No tingling or anything like that.
No. I would love to ask him, assuming he would answer truthfully, is Obama one of those elitists you're talking about? Was Obama the rise of his time in office? Was that the rise of these elitists? It was. I mean, but can you have a Chris Matthews say that?
Great point.
I'm not saying Obama caused all of it. Maybe he was the result of it, or the other way around. Maybe when he became president, those elitists came out and said, I mean, keep in mind, he's the one that said on the road. He said it was at a fundraiser, actually. He said those folks in Pennsylvania cling to their God and guns. That's and then at a Christian prayer breakfast, told Christians to get off their high horses over something over the Crusades. After he had just been talking about ISIS,
right, trying to make a moral equivalency of Christians and ISIS.
How is that not part of the problem? Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on inspections. If you're cited for a vehicle defect during a roadside inspection but are not put out of service, you're still expected to arrange necessary repairs. Any future roadside inspections will result in the same violation if it's not taken care of. If you arrange the repair during the same workday, you must keep the maintenance receipt as documentation that the repair was made. If the repair is not made right away, your next post-trip vehicle inspection report must show the defect. The technician, or you if you're authorized to make or oversee the repairs, must certify the problem was fixed. The first time the vehicle is operated after the repair requires the driver, which may be you, to acknowledge the problem was corrected. This tip brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. All I know is after I watched the video and played the audio of John Cox, who is the Republican gubernatorial candidate, I just thought to myself, it's going to be fascinating to see what the messaging is going to be from Republicans and Democrats also coming into the 2018 midterms. It really is. I am fascinated by what they believe will get them to the finish line. Now, I know politically what the Republicans, it looks like that they plan on doing. I'm not sure what the Democrats plan. Remember just a couple of months ago, it was all about the fact that, okay, we've got to get off this pounding on Trump every day. We can't be reacting to everything that Donald Trump's. Well, it's gotten worse.
Yeah, I don't know. I think right now it's their only game. I don't know where you take it from here. You can't just change right now with Mueller still being in place, with the investigation essentially still on. You just cling to that and hope that it's going to work for you. Mm-hmm. You let Trump essentially be your message. Point to him
and his party.
And that's all you do. And the question is, will that be enough?
Trying to save society. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90 Red Eye.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Our friends from Tough Tested have the Tough Tested Power Sled, a really cool Freightliner Coronado. This thing's been customized by Four State Trucks in Joplin, Missouri, by the Chrome Shop Mafia. Brian Martin and those guys did a really great job on it. Our friends George and Wendy Parker are taking this truck all over America. And you can find out where they're going to be. Just go to toughtested.com and follow Tough Tested on Facebook. They're posting pictures and everything else. Talked to George a little while ago. Doing great. And I'm going to be with them next week at Shell Super Rigs in Raphine, Virginia. It's a beautiful part of the country. We're going to be at White's Travel Center, and it's going to be a great, great event. That's 1 week from today, Shell Super Rigs. You can see the Tough Tested Power Sled and so many of those great trucks that are going to be competing in Super Rigs. It's just going to be great. Toughtested.com.
It looks like LeBron is at least looking to keep his half of the promise.
We think that it is clear that now through the NBA Finals that LeBron and the Cavs are protesting the White House.
Yes.
In response to uninviting the Philadelphia Eagles, now the Cavs are going to make sure they do not get an invitation from the White House.
Right. By the president disinviting the team that disinvited themselves.
Yes, the team, the headline reads, Trump disinvited the Eagles. Nope, the Eagles disinvited the Eagles.
Right.
Did they want to go? So, we're not going. Okay, I'll cancel the event.
How dare you cancel the event?
Okay, well, you guys want to come? No! All right. Let's talk beauty pageants.
And there's something to say. There was a great piece that I want to read just a couple of paragraphs on a little bit later on in the show, because it's absolute greatness as to, you know, the state of the NFL and why people are offended. And it's a good article. Why? Because it makes total sense. But first to you we go. Let's go to Steve in Sterling, Virginia. Steve, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Steve.
Morning.
Hi.
How's it going, fellas?
Very, very good.
Yeah, I tried calling last night, and I wanted to get started on the subject of the economy.
Yes.
And the economy's running pretty hot right now. And the subject came up that the feds were going to raise the interest rates. And then Trump puts the tariffs into place. And that throws the money into the government coffers instead of paying it out to the foreign countries. We pay out a lot of money to everybody else. And when we put these tariffs in place and say, we don't have to pay out as much, then that money that's not paid out that we get in tariffs goes in the government coffers, and then that money then can be used to pay for whatever we choose to use the government surplus for. Could be maybe used for the wall. I'm just throwing that in there as maybe what we could do with the money.
Well, it's good then. Because, then the, it would be good then because then the president, I guess, could claim that the American consumer has paid for the wall.
Well, any way he wants to do it. He can call it the tariffs for the economy but to Mexico, as far as that goes.
Well, no, it's not Mexico. No, that would be not telling the truth. Mexico would not be paying for the wall. United States consumers would pay for the wall.
The tariffs on foreign products is paid for by the consumer.
The American citizen pays the tariff.
Okay, well, I don't claim to know anything about all this, but I was thinking last night.
Well, for not knowing a lot, then you've made quite a few assumptions. One of them,
yeah, I did.
One of them correctly, because you do believe, you haven't said it yet, but it's what we put down you wanted to say, that's why we went to you, is that Trump needs to slow the economy and therefore the tariffs are good because it slows the economy and therefore interest rates won't go up. You wanted to say that. Okay, well, then you do know what's going on. You do understand that tariffs hurt the economy. Now, the fact is,
Trump has got to slow the economy down.
There is no evidence that the economy is into long-term rapid growth. In fact, there is no evidence of that right now. What we have had over the last year is a little less than 3% growth, which is better than we've had before, but Trump wants 4% growth. So we're not up to the growth. He wants 4 or 5% growth. And the Atlanta Fed said in this next quarter they hope to have 4.8% growth, which would be great, but that would simply be for one quarter. But to sit there and say that the president needs to put tariffs in because the economy is growing so quickly, there is no evidence that long term we are seeing 4 to 5% growth, which then the feds would probably wish to increase the interest rate more in order to slow growth down so you don't get as much inflation. I disagree with that concept to begin with. I don't think government should be regulating the economy as they do. I don't think the Fed should be doing it. I don't think the president should be doing it. That's not the role of the federal government.
I'm just throwing this idea out there because I was sitting here thinking the numbers, you know, crunching. Where's the money going to go? If he puts trillions of dollars in debt in the lower part of the economy by letting them increase the interest rates, that doesn't do anything for us. But that just weighs down the economy.
If the government gets out of the way, Steve, and the economy is growing, that is doing something for everyone.
Okay, I'm just playing with
Steve,
numbers here.
Steve, it's nonsense when you hear those politicians and everybody else saying, well, it's heating up too much. The economy's growing too fast. No, the benefits far outweigh any negative in that situation. Light years.
Anyway, thanks for talking with me.
Okay. All right.
Thanks,
you're welcome.
Steve. Yeah. It's just, you just can't get to that point of making it more beneficial than a good economy.
Well, number one, the president isn't making that claim. And one thing, and we understand that there are people out there that wish to support the president no matter what he does. And so they project on what they believe the president is doing, even though the president has never said that that's what he is doing. The president has never said he is putting in tariffs in order to slow down an overheated economy.
Right.
So, again, you're just projecting. You're trying to find the good in it because you understand. The last caller clearly understood. You said you didn't understand anything. You did. You understand the tariffs will slow the economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were looking for the bright spot to say, well, the president wants to tap down inflation on it. Well, he hasn't said that.
Right. It's, I think when we get to the end of this, and you and I were discussing this earlier, there seems to be some sentiment right now that this is going to be short-lived. For whatever reason, we don't know where it's coming from. Either confidence that it will, that the the president will reverse it and then only keep the threat of the or keep the tariffs on China and give the exemptions to Mexico, Canada, and the EU. I don't know where that would be coming from. We have seen none of that in the media outside of speculation. A message from the White House or something, a leak that says, well, the president's just using this for negotiations at G7 or conversation to be had or something, negotiation in NAFTA or whatever it is. All that is speculation, but we haven't heard any of that. We're just wondering why those governors, like a Governor Abbott of Texas, would not be more vocal because they know that these tariffs are going to hurt their state. Retaliatory tariffs are already in place now from all of those major trade partners. So that's going to hurt industry. Those states that are hurt by it and those nations that put those retaliatory tariffs in place know exactly which states to target politically, and they did. So it's only a matter of time if it's not happening all behind the scenes already. Before those governors are outraged, you know they're certainly not happy. The question is, why haven't they been more vocal publicly about that situation? And we don't know. But with the market doing what it did on Wednesday and the lack, I guess, the silence of it all, it seems that there's this belief that those tariffs aren't going to remain very long. We'll see. And we'll see if anything comes of the G7 summit, which is Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, but, you know, when I found it interesting, the last caller tried to come up with a positive for tariffs. To us, it's never a positive when government says, number one, and this is the thing that, you know, I know a lot of people are befuddled out there. If we had brought up tariffs when we did bring up tariffs during the campaign, there was a lot more pushback, you know, from Trump supporters than we're getting right now. Because when you break it down and you say, okay, here's what's going on, it doesn't make sense. When you find out that we have a trade surplus on steel with Mexico, Canada announcing, we don't understand why you're doing this. You have a trade surplus with us. You're shipping more steel into our country than we're shipping to you. It doesn't make any sense. Why are you doing it? And then the president of the tweet brings up the War of 1812. I mean, it's bizarre. And you know, and so you look at what has just come out the last couple of days on it. We have told you pork producers who really have been hit first and hardest by this, just by the talk of the president over the last few months. Iowa pork producers losing $500 million because they've had to drastically lower the cost of pork in order to get it shipped out because they don't know, because the market is uncertain about it. You've got the Republicans in Congress now, I think, probably waiting. And you and I asked the question, is the market looking at this? Do they believe that the Republicans will come out strong and try to rein in the president? Because what Republicans are saying is, Mr. President, the national security angle that you're using to put these tariffs in is complete BS. It's not the truth. Don't lie to the American public about it. If you want to do it just to get a better deal, fine. But you can't. Here's the whole point. He knows he can't do it just to get a better deal. He can't put those tariffs on. So he's saying it's because of national security reasons. Mm-hmm. He knows it's not the truth. Congress knows it's not the truth. Everybody knows it's not the truth, even the White House, because they're not out there defending every day that it's about national security.
Right.
Because they can't.
And if you look at this president, has he ever been afraid to defend any position?
No. They just go quiet on ones they can't defend. Mm-hmm. Let's just not talk about it as if it doesn't exist. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to Lee in Fort Worth. Lee, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, guys.
Hey.
My point, my opinion on these tariffs is that I think it's totally political, that he's just shoring up the vote from western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio and making sure he has those two states, and because of the steel industry up there. And that's I really think that's all he's doing with.
Well, remember the one of the biggest people that is throwing opposition at him to the tariffs is Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania. I mean, he's leading this charge that he's the one that came right out and said what the president is doing. The conservative Republican from Pennsylvania, what the president is doing is an abuse of executive power because it is not about national security. So it's we can understand that. I don't think that's the case. I think the president has always believed in tariffs. I just think he has.
Right. This is not new.
It's something that he has believed since he was on Phil Donahue in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. He's always believed in tariffs.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, Lee, is that the president really, and because retaliatory tariffs are going to be put on American steel. And now what do you have? You have that in place. And so how does that help the steel industry? Other parts of the steel industry saying, no, you're going to hurt us too. Alcoa saying, you're going to hurt us, because they know retaliatory tariffs are going to damage their business.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Man, I'm just dying laughing here.
What's so funny?
I'm just reading Daniel Henniger's column, Wall Street Journal. Just a couple of sentences here, okay?
All right.
I'm not going to get into the NFL's recent ruling on what players next season will have to do during the anthem because, frankly, I don't care anymore about the NFL.
Mm.
Being from Cleveland is no help. So he says, naturally, I did watch the start of the Super Bowl to see if anything would happen during the national anthem.
Right.
But it turned out to be the most patriotic display in the history of American sports.
Mm-hmm.
If the rattled NFL proprietors could have put a tank at midfield, they would have. Then I got sucked into watching the whole game because it quickly became the most mesmerizing championship in years. In the old days, hard to believe that's why we watch sports for the sport. How naive we were. But back to the Trump White House, which retaliated for the Eagles' threatened no-shows by disinviting the whole team. Instead, the fans from Philadelphia got a quick concert of red, white, and blue music by the Marine Band and the Army Corps. LeBron James took time off Tuesday from preparing for the Cleveland's NBA final game against Golden State to say neither basketball team would go to the White House because no one wants the invites anyway.
Yeah.
The press says that Mr. Trump is pushing the battle of the national anthem because it plays to his base. I suppose it does. But here's what galls even non-Trumpians about this kneeling kerfuffle.
Kerfuffle.
We live in a world soaked in partisan politics. Then one day you wake up ready to relax with NFL Sunday, and you discover that the Star-Spangled Banner has become totally politicized. Any normal person, including liberals who will not admit it, would have a three-word reaction to this spectacle, with the first two words beginning with a W TNT.
All right.
So what else is new? Today, if someone has a grievance or beef, the first thing they do is look for something to attach to it. The anthem, the Pledge of Allegiance, 19th century American fiction, mom's apple pie.
Leave my mom out of it.
Anything that will draw the world's attention, meaning the attention of social media.
Mm-hmm.
I got an email this week from a group called Artists Getting Political Ahead of Midterms. How? By embedding political messages in everyday objects such as bus kiosks, hand towels, bedspreads, and toilets.
Well, the toilet I get, but bedspreads?
Then even now, the people who voted for Hillary still claim to be shocked and stunned that an electorate beaten down by the politics of everything in life voted for the guy who makes a mockery of all of that.
Hmm.
Donald Trump is a showman who is playing the media. Now he's got Twitter. In 2016, his Republican primary opponents didn't recognize that we are living in the age of bread and circuses, an age Donald Trump did not create, but into which he inserted his own circus. Curiosity seekers filled the tent and loved the show.
Greatest showman on earth. Right?
The sophisticates of the media thought that they could beat Donald Trump at this game by burying him under waves of negative publicity, but he feeds off it. Just as he turned the Philadelphia Eagles White House no-show into a display of patriotic music with the maestro at the center.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, fantastically, some Democrats are complaining that they can't get their message out because Donald Trump has blotted all the media sun. Gee whiz, whose fault is that? You know, you think about the circuses that have been created by the left for the longest time.
Yeah.
And what you had was, and that it is true, you had a president that came in and said, oh, okay, I'll play my own circus. And then what you hear then is, no, you can't. When you play your own circus, you destroy the image of the presidency.
Right.
He's like, I don't care.
Well, he didn't.
And the public doesn't care. If you're going to play these games, you're going to play the circus, you're going to politicize everything, I'll do the same thing. I'll join the circus.
Right. I'll create my own circus.
Yep.
But the left has been doing this for a long, long time. They think because they use different words, it's different. They think because they can put it into a clever line or something that it's different. But it's not. It's the same effect. It's the same approach. And the president is just straight shooting and calling them out on it. He has his own style of doing so, but he's not going to ignore it. You've had how many Republicans over the years that won't get directly to the point, the message? You played the message from John Cox, you know, running for governor in California, a Republican, pointing to the problems of California. And people know it. The left in California knows it. But we've been asking the Republican Party to get to the point and campaign and put the ads together that are very simple to put together, but yet when they move and someone calls them out on it, they shudder and they hide under the covers and they go back into this, well, I'm sorry. You're sorry for what? There's no need to apologize. What you said was true. Now, I'm not going to condone everything the president has said on the campaign trail or as president. But the one thing he did, and he took it a little bit further than we were promoting, but I mean, he has called the left out. I think one of the most effective things he did is when he sat at that table and had an empty chair with Nancy Pelosi's, you know,
we complimented him. That was great imagery.
And Chuck Schumer's sign on the other side. That was great, because guess what? Trump is, the pictures are going to You got to take, what are you going to do? You're not going to take the picture? Mm-hmm. Of course you are. So he knew how to use that moment. Now, again, not everything that he does gets an A-plus from us, but what he has done overall is changing American politics to the point that we all need to call it what it is. We all need to look at something, and not just the talk show hosts on radio, not just the people on social media, but the American public, because we do see it that way. We do see things at a very simple and direct level, much like the president. We don't use the same words. Maybe we don't, you know, tweet as much, but we're thinking it. When he calls out the left and the ridiculous behavior of the left, it's really the elitists that Chris Matthews was talking about the other morning are the ones that pretend, well, I never. Well, yeah, you have, and we've seen
you
do.
Yeah, because you've created your own circus.
Yes.
And the president just said, well, I'm going to bring my circus to town, too.
Right.
And I think the way he put that, Daniel Henniger, was great. The other thing that he points out is, and we have before, about the great mistake that the left has made with the whole NFL protest. First off, you had Colin Kaepernick, who did it. And first it was about Mike. Remember, it came out because of Michael Brown. Mm-hmm. Well, we all know Michael Brown was built in a lie. So if you're going to come out and you're going to get into the arena of ideas, you need to make sure that you what you use as your moment to what many people believe is the respect of the national anthem, you better be right on the issue that you're talking about to begin with. Then he said, well, police brutality overall in general. And then you had people like Heather McDonald who came out and said, okay, let's look at all the police statistics. Let's find out if there really is institutional racism that exists, that is that because of the institutional racism that blacks are unfairly, by a percentage of their population and crimes committed, unfairly targeted by police. Well, what she found is you can't make that case. In fact, the cases that were made as we brought up, there are roughly, this is a couple of years ago, 25, 26 million vehicle stops a year. 25, 26 million. There's maybe four or five incidents in an entire year that you can point at. And so what happened was you had Colin Kaepernick who kneeled. There was outrage. You're disrespecting the flag. His point was police brutality. Others fought back and said, not saying it doesn't happen, but the fact is it isn't happening in any type of epidemic way whatsoever. And if you're stating that until it stops and there isn't one incident, when you have tens of millions of stops every year, and that's just automobiles. That doesn't mean the stops that happen outside of your automobile being stopped, which could add another 25 to 30 million.
Overall encounters,
Encounters. And so when you're talking about four or five, that's just the, people would look at it and say, well, that's just the natural thing that's going to happen when you have police by that type of numbers confronting 320 million citizens. You're going to have the police make mistakes, and you're going to have the people that they pull over make mistakes or are criminals and are trying to do wrong. And so to indict the national anthem on that and attach to all America to those few instances is unfair. And that's to the point we got to in the first year. Then in the second year, it was Michael Bennett of the Seattle Seahawks lying about what the Las Vegas police did in the incident of a active shooter call that came into them. He got up and ran. And he called them racist. He called them everything in the book until the Las Vegas police released the video. And then you found out Michael Bennett was the liar. Well, that helped ignite the kneeling protest last year. That also was built completely on a falsehood and trying to attach the national anthem, number one, to a very, very small number of cases that happened with tens of millions of stops every year, and then a complete falsehood of the Las Vegas police, nobody bought. And then we found out that Colin Kaepernick also wanted to promote communism and what a great society. We should look more at places like Cuba and how great Cuba is. Then he had the back and forth with the Cuban sports reporter for the Miami Dolphins, who just eviscerated Colin Kaepernick on the things that he was doing. And you found out that Colin Kaepernick was basically trying to play class warfare to promote what? His communist agenda.
Yeah, a guy who praises Fidel Castro and is right. calling out in the States, calling out people of authority who he says are abusive.
And
he can do both in the same person. He can be both, right?
Right. And so then what you got from these players were, if you didn't agree with us, then you're denying us our freedom of speech, which of course is untrue. So that became untrue. And then the players got offended because they said, wait a minute. What do you mean? How can you be you say that we're not respecting the military? We love the military. Well, that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is we believe you're being disrespectful to the military. We don't care what you think. It's what we think. And your protest of what you're protesting is bogus to begin with. And we think you're disrespecting the military. And if you want to encompass everything that people are mad about, that's where it gets to. And then myself, it got to be where the owners started placating the players. And started talking, you know, that's where I stopped last year watching the NFL, was actually the owner's response to it. Because nobody is saying, if Kaepernick wanted to protest outside the stadium, nobody would have cared.
No.
Nobody would have been offended by that. Why? Because for Kaepernick or any of the other NFL players claiming that if you're not for their NFL protest, you don't care for police brutality, also insulted every single NFL patron who loves this country but understands that it's the citizens of the country that always has to watch over government, including law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are today.
And nobody would... It's not the first... person who's protested or been outspoken in pro sports.
No, not at all.
It's not.
No.
It's that you made it part of the presentation of the game.
Right.
When you did that, and then, of course, the NFL kind of went along with it, the broadcasters went along with it. We're not talking about one game. We're not. This went on and on. Built on lies and falsehoods and misrepresentation, wearing the pig socks.
Yep.
All of this, he knew he was going to get that attention. He was going. You're making it part of the display of. So you wonder why people turn away? Because you don't want to tune in on Sunday to watch a game and then have to deal with it all over again. You know, he makes the point here, by the way, in this Wall Street Journal article. That observation that in Sunday's the perfect day for football, right? Mm-hmm. You get home from church, you turn on the TV, you put your sweats on, you sit in front of the game, and the world goes away for a few hours.
They don't want the world to go away for a few hours.
No, the game has gone away.
They want to infect everything with their day-to-day politics or their agenda.
And the
people and the president are saying, no, you don't.
You've made Sunday as busy as any other day in people's minds when you interject that kind of behavior.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let us go to Theo in Detroit. Theo, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I don't know if anybody's approached the subject this way, but let me tell you something. If I walked into work tomorrow, or anybody walked into their job tomorrow with some protest of either pig socks or took a knee or started to state their protest, and I do a very public job. I work in the service industry, shall we say. And if I took that approach, I would lose my job. I can't make those statements. And these football players need to remember it's a job. They're paid to do a job. And you don't walk into your job and make your case there. Now, they have every right to go out on the street on their time off, just like myself, and then I can do what I say,
yeah.
I say what I do.
Right.
But I just think it's a bit ridiculous. It's it's taking it to a far extreme that we should have never let it get there.
And that's why why it was never a free, as we've said, it was never a free speech issue to begin with, because free speech does not apply when you're on the clock.
That's right. Thanks, Theo. That's it. I don't know. Gosh, if you think about Sports Illustrated interviews back in the day, the outspoken liberal athletes in pro sports, that's been around for a long, long time. I don't care if you do an interview or have a protest somewhere else. Go for it. But don't make it part of the game.
Well, I expect that every 53 member of a football team will have my conservative viewpoints, Eric.
For Video Road Log, here's your forecast.
Mainly dry across the U.S. today. We will see some scattered showers in Florida, portions of the Central Plains and Upper Great Lakes. But for the most part, the heavy rains that we've seen over the past several weeks will have subsided. It's been a lot of progress made on corn planting in the past couple weeks. In fact, of the 18 states reporting, 97% of the corn crop is in the ground. 86% has emerged. Soybeans ahead of schedule, 87% planted. And that exceeds the 75% that is typically planted by this time of year. A few select cities forecast in high temperature. Seattle, clear today. Rain returns tomorrow, high 73. Dallas, the heat wave continues. I define a heat wave as any three-day period of 90-degree-plus temperatures or above. Dallas at 96 today, and it's safe to say the heat wave there continues. In Chicago, we'll see a 30% chance of showers, high today 82. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
We scare a few people. I don't know, we scare a lot of people.
I'm sorry, I got busy here.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Just listening to some on The View talk about Bill Clinton. You know, because the interview.
Well,
let's tap into it for a little bit. From The View, okay?
All right.
This book.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to do that.
In this specific time of Me Too, he should never leave the house without knowing that question's going to come.
Why do they always get a pass? Like, this is the part that I don't understand. I watched the original Craig Melvin interview, and you should expect this question in the era of Me Too. Yes. And you are a notorious philanderer and in the interview, he called Monica Lewinsky her. He talked about being $16 million in debt coming out, like, where I'm supposed to feel sorry for you when you leave the White House. The Clintons,
that was very Trumpian.
Have a different,
very
Trumpian. And the Clintons are continuing to get a pass in the media. And it was very obvious that the man who once was the great, orator, I feel your pain, that man is long gone because he totally screwed up that interview. He had to apologize again on Stephen Colbert. And it is a different era. And going forth on what we were pivoting on in the last segment, you have to get away from the Clintons if the Democrats have any future whatsoever. Everything about them is problematic.
Well, you know, what I want to say is that I remember when the Lewinsky scandal occurred, because we were...
Okay, that's... But I wanted to get to Meghan McCain's thing on that.
I read a headline the other day. I didn't read the story, but the headline made a point that the Clintons will always have defenders in the media. I think that's a given. But there are fewer of them today.
There are fewer of them, and when you saw the reaction of Bill Clinton, I think part of him wonders, I used to be the first black president.
Right. I mean, remember, Megan makes the really great point that he went from that communicator that for the left, I won't say he was the Ronald Reagan, but in terms of communication, getting that message across, you know, he had a great great communications skills. Well, but that's the left. They will judge someone almost exclusively on that at times. That's how they judged Obama. It was that that speech, the DNC speech that he gave, that people said, well, hey, that guy needs to run for president. Well, then you have Bill Clinton, same thing. But what about their actions? Now, Obama hasn't, as far as we know, had any affairs or been accused of abusing or raping anyone. But Bill Clinton was at that point, was getting away with, according to the allegations, with criminal behavior. And now the Monica Lewinsky thing, the affair, and something that I have said since the beginning. He was the most powerful man in the world, and she was an intern. They keep saying consensual, but really, was it? I say that as a father of women, and it was always a concern for me. Now the left is basically playing that same thing. Those were really that was the tone of the questioning on the Today Show.
Well, when you see, you know, Kathleen Willey, Juanita Broderick still getting publicity, and you know, we're talking 20 years later,
right?
That, you know, they're still, you know, making the appearances, and they probably also sense that the, you know, because of the hashtag Me Too movement, more people are willing to listen to them. But as we have said for years, I mean, when we started hearing, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't have treated Bill Clinton. Oh, shut up. If Hillary was elected today, nobody would be talking about Bill Clinton. You realize that the Clintons are finally used up. They're not going to help you in your day-to-day political agenda anymore. So you're now dumping them and moving on, you know, to the next person, whoever that next person is. Because, you know, I started thinking about that, you know, that because we have seen since Hillary's election loss, the marginalization of the Clintons. You know, even by Democrats and the left, it's almost like, let's, you know, time to move on. But I really, and again, I could be wrong here, but I don't sense any excitement. Now, I know that if Obama's out there and says, don't you wish I was president again, he would get cheers. But I don't sense, you have to remember the adoration for that man. You and I remember D-Day being yesterday, D-Day of the D-Day anniversary of 2009, it would have been. And you and I playing the Evan Thomas, we weren't on Red Eye yet, we had our old show. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was Evan Thomas, I believe, and was he on with Chris Matthews?
Yeah, it was on MSNBC, I think
MSNBC,
it was on Chris's show, yeah.
Where he was talking about, you know, Obama being godlike.
Right. He hovers.
He
hovers above all of the fray.
Right. And people forget about how he was worshipped. I don't sense that anymore. I think he would get the complimentary, yes, we wish you were president again, instead of this Trump. But think about that in the very, very beginning. People worshipped him.
Well, Chris Matthews, who talks about the other day on Morning Joe about the elitists in the party and how he doesn't care for that kind of attitude. You helped build it. Your adoration for, you know, the leg tingling and your adoration for the former president, that helps to build that. I'm not saying you're fully responsible, but you were part of it.
And you probably get the feeling from listening to our show, we don't really delve into that type of political idolatry, even towards our favorite candidates. We may say, okay, that's a good thing that they did there, but we'll criticize them the next day. We think it's stupid for adults in the world's greatest ever constitutional republic to practice that kind of love and adoration for any politician.
I can appreciate someone's work.
So can I.
I can respect them a great deal or not. The adoration is a weird thing for me to conceive, because I don't know. It just, I guess the way I grew up.
But who was the, you know, because Clinton's had it for such a long time, that adoration.
Right.
And then Obama came, and as you mentioned, when he did the DNC speech, he was target. This is the guy.
He's the guy.
This is the guy. You don't have that right now.
No.
That doesn't exist.
You had it for about 24 hours with Oprah. Right? Right? But where was it coming from, though? Where was it coming from? With Barack Obama then, it was coming from not just the elitist in the party. It was also coming from a lot of the rank and file. With Oprah, it was the Hollywood elite and the media, the elitists in the media and Hollywood.
That's true.
That really carried that narrative. And they couldn't even carry it past, 24 hours. You know, we were joking, President-elect Oprah, you know, because they basically had just ushered her into office.
Now,
in their mind,
remember,
some of
though.
Them, yeah.
Now, I don't know, because they haven't taken it in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Schultz might have moved up a little bit.
Right.
But what was it, the top two? Was Oprah and... forgot who the other one was. The top two for the Democrats about 2 weeks ago.
Mm.
They took the survey again, and Oprah was still at the top of...
Mm-hmm.
Of the run.
Look, if as long as Trump is the guy you're running against, I can see that, definitely. I don't know if it's the same, and maybe it is. Maybe I've got it wrong. I don't know that it is the same idolatry, but actually it would be, because she's a celebrity. And a lot on the left, a lot of people on the left, they idolize people in Hollywood. What happens with the most trusted list every year? Well, it's often a bunch of celebrities, people who lie for a living. You know, really, you know nothing about them. You don't know anything about who they are as individuals, but they're the most trusted. Our list would be our mom and dad. Those would be on the list. Our family. But the point being is that they idolize people in Hollywood. They often do. I mean, that adoration, that fandom, you know, they are true fanatics about the Hollywood types.
This other story relating to the whole NFL thing, when Nebraska volleyball coach John Cook tweeted this week that his team would relish a trip to the White House, he was surprised at the negative reaction from others on Twitter.
Yep, you can't say that.
Now, wait a minute. If you're surprised, then you are completely not involved in social media. There's
no way
that as a coach of a major, I'm assuming Nebraska is a Division I, you know, a program for volleyball. Mm-hmm. There's no way that you can tweet out as a coach of a major Division I sports program, "Oh, we would relish a trip to the White House," that you're not going to get hit on social media.
Even in middle America, you can't get away with that.
You can't be surprised by the reaction.
Well, and maybe that's it. You know, he's thinking his world,
right?
Well, Twitter world, social media world is different. That actually is the world. That's people from all over that once one latches onto it, then they're going to retweet it or they're going to share it with all their friends, and everybody's coming after you to shame you.
I was shocked, Cook told the World Herald. It shows you where the country is.
Yeah.
We're divided now. Now? We've been divided for a while.
Yeah.
Nebraska would love to go to the White House, Cook wrote. Huskers would be honored and proud to visit our leaders in D.C. and represent Nebraska.
All right. Yeah. No, you're going to be shamed. Shamed. I don't, you know what? God bless the guy if he is.
Yeah, I know.
You know, because that means he's living a life, right? He's not living in that crazy world of social media
day,
and that
right.
back and forth.
If you are, just a warning out there.
That's an amateur moment. But that's okay.
If you're going to go on Twitter.
Yeah.
And you represent a major sports program, and you do not toe the liberal line, expect a barrage of criticism.
I'm surprised he hasn't been fired. I'm only halfway joking. Oh, it's insane. It's just insane. You know, and... I know a lot of people will, and we get this sometimes, "Why aren't you guys angry?" Seriously, I can't. They take enough of my taxes or my hard-earned money for taxes. I'm not going to give them my joy, too.
Yeah, they don't get my life.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Chris in Oregon. Chris, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, you know, I am so sick of protesting this, protesting that. I have a real simple viewpoint on this. You ignore a small child throwing a tantrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy the game if you still can. And then quietly don't buy the product. They will know.
Yeah, but a lot of people buy the games.
I watch on free TV, bro.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lot of people buy the games.
Right, they subscribe to NFL Network. And, right.
You don't buy the advertised product.
Right.
You mean the sponsor from the sponsors.
Sponsors.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
But
it's just like the gun protesters.
I'm sure there are people out there that are doing just that, and to each his own. But when you spoil the nature of and the tone. And by the way, we said even in some of the ads, you see some of that political stuff seeping through. Again, people will be turned off by something and believe that the tone, the spirit of the presentation of the game has changed.
Yeah.
When that changes, you're just simply not, some people just simply aren't drawn to it anymore.
And
that may change, too, and people may go back.
And I don't tell people how to protest. People are smart enough to figure out what to do on their own, as we saw last year. And as I said, people made different choices than I made, and I know the people of goodwill. I know a lot of people that, because I'm close to people actually in the NFL, that asked me about, you know, my decision and privately agreed and said, well, but I didn't judge anybody. I've got friends of mine who continue to watch the NFL games. And that's fine with me. People of goodwill can disagree on what they wanted to do in that particular situation. As the last caller said, I'm going to affect them by not buying the advertisement.
Yeah. I mean, I've had problems with the Cowboys since Jerry Jones bought the team. it's really not about Kaepernick at all. It's not about anything of the protest at all, really. That stuff started years ago. But for me, I'm not the biggest sports fan. I'm a huge Cowboys fan. But, and again, maybe one day that changes. Maybe I start watching again. We'll see. But to each his own.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.